Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-ah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with General Arnold Panaro. Then Steve Williford will present Gun Owners of America. And, of course, we'll conclude with the military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to welcome back to the show retired Marine General Arnold Panaro. Arnold and I both led rifle platoons in Vietnam. He later went into the reserves. He served in the U.S. Senate as a staffer on the committee that covers our military. He's seen our military from about every possible direction. So welcome back, Arnold. Thank you for joining us.
Danny, always a privilege to be with you and your listeners.
Arnold, please start by reviewing a little bit of your time in uniform and in Congress.
Well, Denny, as you indicated, I served as an infantry platoon commander in Vietnam, primarily serving with all draftees at the time, a very unpopular war, as you know. We operated about in the Quezon Mountains on the Ho Chi Minh Trail, trying to interdict the Chinese bringing supplies into South Vietnam. So I have a little bit of experience of fighting the Chinese. Then I went to graduate school when I got out, finished my active duty. Went to work in the United States Senate and ultimately became the staff director of the Senate Armed Services Committee. Stayed in the Marine Corps Reserve, had the privilege of going to additional combat, Desert Shield, Desert Storm. Was the head of the Marine Corps Reserve after 9/11 when we mobilized the Marine Corps Reserve. And had worked in the business world since leaving the Senate in 1997.
So you haven't been bored, I think that's a safe
word. That's a fact.
That's a fact. Let's look at our military challenges. I say that dealing with and preparing to assist Taiwan if it's involved and the resulting cutoff of trade with China, they're talking about cutting off all rare metal export to the United States. And I think they make 98% of all the rare metal mining in the world. That could shut the doors for many of our factories. Just China is a huge issue. I suspect you agree with that.
Absolutely, Denny. And if we talked about on your program previously, when you've highlighted this time and time again, and been one of the real leaders in pointing out the fact that China is very clear about their ambitions, very clear about how they're going about it, and they intend to be the predominant power in the world militarily, economically, technologically, and diplomatically. And unfortunately, they're well underway in terms of those goals. Taiwan is critically important to the Western democracies for several reasons, not just economic, but as a symbol of independence. And if we were to allow China to basically subjugate Taiwan, it would send a signal to democracies all over the world that the United States and our allies, you know, are not going to stand up to bullies and authoritarian regimes like China and Russia. Number two, they build the most sophisticated chips in the world, most of which are found in everything we operate in the United States of America on a day-to-day basis. So they are a critical element of a fundamental supply chain of things that the United States continues to excel in, and we want to continue to excel in and be competitive economically, both at home and abroad. So Taiwan is an extremely important issue for us, and we aren't doing enough right now. China is saber-rattling around Taiwan, showing the world how they could encircle Taiwan, take over Taiwan, and we don't want to have a war with China. We want to deter China, and basically the way you deter a bully is you've got to show them that you've got the force that you can use if you have to. Over.
Yes, sir. I am fond of saying that the only reason for us to have a military is to kill people and break things. And if we're really good at it, people don't want to mess with us. That's called deterrence. And that's what we should do. But our military is as weak now as I can ever remember it in all kinds of different ways. And China is, I guess dictatorships do a much better job of setting goals and moving towards them. Because as you pointed out, they are strong and they're doing it. And part of this had to do with Richard Nixon, I think, created the One China policy back in the early 70s. Are we still doing that?
Well, Danny, I was actually working in the United States Senate when we passed the Taiwan Relations Act. And my boss at the time, Senator Sam Nunn, was heavily involved in that, as was Barry Goldwater, Ted Stevens, that actually fought with Chiang Kai-shek, John Glenn, a huge supporter of Taiwan. And the Taiwan Relations Act is very clear that we commit to Taiwan to basically maintain and help them preserve their independence. Maybe we want to say nominally there's a one China policy, but that doesn't mean that the Chinese mainland gets to take over a democratically controlled country of Taiwan. And so the Taiwan Relations Act, and Joe Biden, the president, has been very clear we're going to defend Taiwan. Now, every time he says that, a lot of his aides run around, oh, no, 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 we don't want to get China upset. Well, look, China's on the mark. There's nothing we're going to say or do that's going to calm them down. They're saber-rattling every day. They're providing aid and comfort to Russia as Russia turns Ukraine, beautiful cities, into rubble. And they kill women and children in violation of every law of war, and they create every war crime. So China is not a benign actor right now, and we need to understand that and realize that.
Yes, sir. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with General Arnold Panaro. So China is, I mean, and they're all over the place. I mean, they've got contracts and relations in Latin America, the Mideast. I mean, they're all over the place diplomatically, and diplomatically usually means military support or involvement sometime is coming. Am I right there? I mean, I see them all over the place.
They buy their alliances. They are an economic power, and they spend money in Africa, in South America. Huawei basically has more 5G positions in South America than anybody else. They buy their way in, and they're not really good neighbors. For example, a lot of the dams they're building in China on their big rivers, people say, well, that's for flood control. Actually, it's the water supply for all their neighbors to the south. And if Vietnam or Cambodia or Laos or Thailand or any of those countries ever decided to kind of push back on China, they could just shut their water supply down. So these are very, very aggressive countries.
Yes, sir. And we're vulnerable just because we're so dependent on them for so much stuff like rare earths. Okay. And China is also supporting Russia in Russia's camp. They're buying gas and fuel from them. Are they supporting them in other ways too?
Well, obviously they've given them a lot of moral support, a lot of political support. I have to believe that they're slipping them lethal weapons under the table. No one's come out and said that right now, but it defies common sense, Denny, to think they're not providing them some implements of war. Maybe they're not artillery shells, but I guarantee you, or they're funneling it and laundering it through North Korea and Iran. So, but you're right. They're supporting them economically and diplomatically, which is a huge boost for Putin.
It is. And it seems to me that if Ukraine stays to be a big deal, that means when, and I don't think if, but when China moves on Taiwan, that'll just be one more thing to the world has to look at, as opposed to if China attacked Taiwan after Ukraine was dealt with. So I expect
we
to do it.
We can beef up deterrence vis-a-vis China and Taiwan. First of all, there's $14 billion of foreign military sales that we've committed to Taiwan that we haven't delivered. $14 billion of military equipment. Number two, we could do additional training with the Taiwanese. Number three, we could have the National Guard set up a partnership for peace with them, as they have with a lot of other countries, including Ukraine. We could basically give the Taiwanese additional long-range missile capability to threaten Chinese financial center in Shanghai and their cultural center and say, look, you want to invade Taiwan? Well, guess what? It's not going to be without significant cost on your own homeland. So there's a lot of things we should be and can do right now that would improve deterrence. As you said, George Washington had a line that the best way to preserve the peace is to be prepared for war. And basically, we want to deter China. And there's a lot of things we could do right now that would deter them.
And we certainly should be doing. Do you have any idea why we're not delivering the military equipment that we promised?
Well, the foreign military sales system is a very bureaucratic system, has been through every administration. It's the bureaucratic paperwork, the bureaucracy, the review process. It's all tied up in red tape, which is inexcusable, particularly vis-a-vis Taiwan. So every administration has said, we're going to cut the red tape, we're going to deliver stuff sooner, but they haven't gotten the results that we need.
Well, there's more to discuss about China and other challenges, and Arnold's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to balance on one foot for 3 minutes, then do the same thing on the other foot. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. Arnold and I will be right back.
Fellow Americans, we need your help. PatriotFoods.com. We are fighting for the American farmer. U.S. only fruits and vegetables from your soil. Go to PatriotFoods.com. Use your promo code FREEDOM and you get 10% off today. support your U.S. farmer. Promo code FREEDOM, 10% off. Thank you so much.
It's great food. I eat it. This is Colonel Denny Gillum, patriotfoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with retired Marine General Arnold Panaro. Well, Arnold, I think we have sort of covered the China. I mean, I guess we could talk about it nonstop for a year, but I think we've covered the key areas. Let's move to Ukraine. That certainly is a huge issue. What should we do? How much should we do? How long should we do it? What about the rest of the world participating and supporting them? Give us an overview.
Denny, I would say that after the U.S. and our allies got off to a little bit of a slow start, the pace has picked up. The United States has done a good job of organizing everybody. We're certainly providing a lot of lethal equipment that's keeping Ukraine in the fight. I think a lot of people need to understand, the American public, that the risk of Putin succeeding in Ukraine would be extremely damaging and extremely worse than if Ukraine was to lose, because basically it would tell Iran, North Korea, and China, you can do whatever you want. You can take over any country you want to take over, because the West isn't going to do anything about it. So yes, it's costing a lot of money. Yes, a lot of lives are being lost in a grinded out warfare right now. But on the other hand, NATO is stronger than it's ever been. Finland just joined. That creates an additional 803-mile border with NATO and Russia that we ought to take advantage of. So unfortunately, we're going to have to be there for the long haul with Ukraine as they fight Russia.
Why aren't we demanding that the other NATO countries in Europe do a heck of a lot more? I mean, the richest country in Western Europe is Germany. The last time I checked, they were not doing much of anything. And they're the ones that are at risk if Russia gets aggressive post Ukraine.
Denny, a couple of countries like Poland. Poland has been a real trooper there. They've taken in refugees. They're providing military assistance. Poland is just doing way, way more, fighting above their weight. The United Kingdom and a couple of others. Germany has been a piker for years when it comes to NATO. They're trying to hedge their bets against Russia and also against China. And you're correct. They have the strongest economy. They ought to be doing a lot more. I know they're more nervous about Russia than they've been in the past, and hopefully that maybe will keep them to be a little bit more aggressive. But yes, they should be doing a lot more. But I'll tell you, I have to give our leadership in the Pentagon a lot of credit for putting a coalition together and keeping it together in terms of the support, for Ukraine.
You know, that's a good point, Arnold. I have been quite a bit critical about some things. And our Pentagon has done a good job of keeping that going, of putting it together and keeping it together, haven't they?
They have. I will tell you this story that's just breaking now about the leak of this highly classified information that has a lot of information that, unfortunately, I think is going to be advantageous to the Russian side, is just so disgraceful. I mean, I don't know what gets into people in the Pentagon or wherever it came from that leaks this classified and sensitive information.
Well, we do have some people with odd values in our nation, to include in our government. And I don't know what else to say about that. So, standing with Ukraine, I think that one of the big challenges that we're facing is that Congress doesn't have their act together. The divisiveness, but party divisiveness and political stuff. And are we going to get things passed that needs to get passed?
Well, there's a couple of good points and a couple of bad points. On the good side, There was bipartisan support for the creation of the China Select Committee, chaired by Congressman Mike Gallagher from Wisconsin. The ranking Democrat is Roger Crisp-Worthy from Illinois. They've got some really good members on that. They're doing a great job in terms of educating the American public about the dangers of China. They'll be making recommendations to the other committees on things we ought to be doing. So that's a good point. I think our defense authorizing committees are off to a strong start. Neither side, either Democrat, Republican, or House or Senate, believes the defense budget request is adequate. It needs to be beefed up. However, we're in a very, very difficult political situation. The deficit hawks are back. The Republican caucus in the House is divided in terms of how much money. A lot of them would like to roll spending back to previous year's levels, which would be a significant cut to the Department of Defense. We always worry about what we call continuing resolutions, Congress not getting its work done and funding the government through stopgap measures. This is a year where we could really have a very dicey situation, potentially even a government shutdown because of the divisions that you point out. So it's the worst timing ever in terms of the world situation, the world being more dangerous and unstable than in the peak of the Cold War, and Congress being more chaotic than it's been in recent years.
Yes, sir. I have one more quickie, and then let's wrap it up. That is the challenge that our military is having in getting enlistees. That's, I guess, the Army's the only one that didn't make goals, but the other ones were really close and may not make them again, make them in the future. Any idea what we can do about that?
Well, Denny, I was in the Senate in 1973 when we went from the draft, extremely unpopular, to the all-volunteer force. And the all-volunteer force struggled during the decade of the 70s. In the Senate Armed Services Committee, we passed a lot of legislation to keep it afloat. So we've had recruiting issues from time to time with the all-volunteer force. Nothing as bad as it is right now. The Pentagon has admitted calendar 22 and now calendar 23 will be some of our worst years ever in terms of recruiting. We target the 18 to 24 year old population. And of that, the propensity to enlist, meaning those people that are inclined to want to serve in the military, is the lowest we've seen since the advent of the volunteer force. Of that target population, a vast majority of them are unfit either mentally or physically to serve. A lot of overweight, a lot of medical issues. The job market, whatever one of people want to say about the economy, in that 18 to 24 year old segment, anybody in that population that wants a job can find a job other than being in the military. The sons and daughters of the military that used to be a great source for recruiting, they're not as coming in the military as much as they have in years past. So all around, it's just a very, very difficult recruiting environment for our military. And none of the services are making their quotas.
Yes, sir. That's what I fear. Arnold, what are the key points you'd like our listeners to take away from our talk today?
Look, I think the key thing is the American public needs to understand we're dealing in a world that's more dangerous and unstable than the peak of the Cold War. We're dealing with some countries, Iran, North Korea, Russia, China, that would do away with our democratic way of life and our democratic freedoms in a heartbeat if they could get away with it. We've got to be strong. We've got to be prepared. We've got to basically invest in those emerging technologies that are not only important for our Department of Defense, but important for our economy to be competitive in the world. So there are a lot of things that we need to do, Denny, but the main thing is for the American people to be educated and informed about the nature of the world we live in.
Yes, sir. Arnold, thank you. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation in uniform and otherwise. I'm proud to call you friend.
Same here. Always a privilege.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss Gun Owners of America with Steve Williford, and we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice, then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, I really welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. It's a real pleasure to welcome to the show Steve Williford from Gun Owners of America. Our Second Amendment rights are under severe attack right now, and Gun Owners of America is one of the main organizations fighting to protect them. So welcome to the show, Steve. Glad you could join us.
I'm glad to be on your show. How are you doing, sir?
Awesome. It's a beautiful day here in Michigan. Steve, tell us a little bit about your background. Where did your interest in firearms come from? How did you get involved in GOA?
Well, my interest in firearms came as a very young boy. At about 5 years old, my father started teaching me how to shoot a Remington 513T bolt-action rifle and teaching me about marksmanship and how to shoot tin cans and things. And very quickly was hunting rabbits and also varmints, you know, predators like coyotes and stuff to keep them away from our livestock. I grew up on a dairy. And from that moment on, I really enjoyed shooting, and it became a way of life. We're living on a farm. We hunted quail and dove with shotguns and rabbits. And like I say, later on, it became larger caliber rifles, deer hunting, and providing meat for our family. And I mean, that's a lost art. We always ate what we shot. And then as a young adult, I started competition shooting and really enjoyed the competitive edge of it and became an instructor and started teaching my kids. By the time my kids, all three of them, both my daughters and my son, by the time they were 8 years old, they were distinguished experts with a pistol.
Wow. That's saying something. You know, my dad never touched a firearm, but when I was young, he started me shooting BB guns. He wanted me to know and understand how to do that. Then I joined the Army, and of course, they taught me a whole lot. Firearms are under attack right now, the Second Amendment rights, and I guess the biggest, most recent thing is the school shooting. That's horrible, but mass shootings always take place at gun-free zones, don't they?
Absolutely. So 94% of the time when a mass shooter comes in, starts shooting and killing people, they come to gun-free zones. And this most recent shooting, apparently, this young lady had a primary target that she was going to go to first and figured out really quickly that there was armed resistance there, that there was security at that particular school. And so she chose to go to the one that she did. You know, this is not a firearms issue. It's a mental health issue. And in the past, we treated mental health. And now, you know, with the way they are nowadays, they say, you're okay. You know, you're just different. You're okay. And so a woman that wants to transition to a man is depressed about their self. They aren't happy with who they are to begin with. And it causes depression and stuff. And that's a mental health issue. And this young lady was lashing out at a system and she was mentally ill. And that's the issue. There is no way that you can stop evil from getting a gun to begin with. You cannot do that.
That's absolutely true.
The most recent data from the FBI has come out now. And you know John Lott from Crime?
Yes.
Professor, a doctor. He's got his doctor's degree. John Lott took and broke down the FBI's own stats. And he took the 94% because the FBI said only 4% of the time from 2014 to 2021, only 4% of the time do someone other than law enforcement stop a shooting. And so John broke that down and he took the 94%, all the mass shootings that happened within gun-free zones. He took those out of the equation. And then what was left from 2014 to 2021 were 204 shootings that weren't in gun-free zones. And out of that 204 shootings, 104 of them were stopped by non-law enforcement civilians like myself.
Carrying legal firearms, doing that.
Legal firearms, that is over 50% of the time. And out of those 104 shootings that were stopped, there were zero, hear this, no innocent bystanders hit by the guy or woman that stopped these shootings.
You know, that's something that everybody needs to understand, and most people don't. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking to Steve Williford from Gun Owners of America.
I was on a liberal radio show, and, you know, I stopped a mass shooting in Sutherland Springs, Texas. And I was the guy that ran across the street barefoot with an AR-15 and engaged a shooter. He hit the truck in front of me, shattered the windshield of the car behind me. He hit the house behind me, and I put 6 out of 6 rounds on him. And I was told by this liberal talk show host, I don't want some Larry Moe or Curly like yourself coming to rescue me. And I asked him, I said, really? Because the police were 5 to 7 minutes behind me. And I didn't miss the gunman once. I didn't miss the murderer once. I hit him 6 out of 6 rounds. Would you have rather stay inside that church with a mad gunman with unlimited ammunition and nobody coming to help for another 5 to 7 minutes? That's ludicrous.
It is. It's crazy. And people don't think that way. I was a college prof for a while. And I asked my students, if a crazy guy came in our classroom right now with a gun and started shooting, would you like me to hide behind my desk or pull out my gun and shoot back? Well, I can't pull out my gun and shoot back because it was a condition of employment that I couldn't have a gun. But to me, the safe solution is to allow everybody in the education process, K-12 and college, to carry concealed if they wish and if they're trained. That way, bad guys don't know who's armed and everybody's protected. And you're just allowing people who already handle a gun well to do so at work and protect everybody. Your point's really well made.
Absolutely. So I remember after one particular shooting, there was a school in Pennsylvania, and they adopted where they would take river stones and put 5-gallon buckets of river stones in each room.
Uh-huh.
I remember how that. ludicrous that the radio stations thought they were for doing that. And we had a local station here in the San Antonio area, and they were just out there just hammering and making fun of this idea that they would put 5-gallon buckets of river stones in a room for the classroom to grab a stone and throw it at the shooter if he came into the room. And I called into that radio show and I said, man, this is great. This is a great idea. But along with that, now arm the teacher. Because a shooter walks in the room and all these kids are throwing rocks at the shooter. And the teacher has a perfect shot at the shooter, at the murderer, with unobstruction. And the teacher is not getting stones thrown at that teacher. But the murderer is. Now it's a different game altogether.
It is indeed.
Arm the teachers, arm the staff, arm the custodians.
Well, yeah, and arm them if they want to be armed. We don't need people who are afraid of guns carrying them.
Absolutely. I'm not advocating for someone that does not want to be armed. But I used to compete against a team that called themselves X-Busters. And 3 of the 5 team members were teachers. And way back then, and this was 20-odd years ago, they said, we want to carry in our classroom. We would defend our students with our own lives.
Yes, sir. I have no doubt about that. Steve, we're about out of time. Talk to us about GOA. How can people get in touch? How can they learn more? What will GOA membership do?
Please go to gunowners.org, gunowners.org, and sign up. We are fighting the fight to keep and bear arms. We're fighting the fight to make sure no new laws are put on the books, and we're fighting the fight to take back some of the freedoms that we have already lost. This country has no clue how many gun laws that have been passed and how horrible it is to go through all of these gun laws and figure out where you can carry, where you can't carry. We believe that shall not be infringed means exactly that. We're the only no compromise gun advocacy group in this country right now.
One more time, the website is gunowners.org.
Yes, gunowners.org.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your active support for our nation's Constitution. I'm proud to call you a friend.
Thank you.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag, then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 60 this time? I want you to range your ready, then stand at ease.
$30 trillion in debt, 20 years of endless war, and veterans not able to get the care they deserve. These are some of the issues Concerned Veterans for America is confronting head-on. At CVA, we aim to amplify the veteran perspective to create a better future for all Americans. But we need your help. Join CVA in shaping a better tomorrow for you, your family, and your community. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement. That's cv4a.org.
The VA frequently denies veterans disability benefits for PTSD. Barry Law has been helping fellow veterans with PTSD fight for compensation for over 20 years. At Barry Law, we've spent decades building a team of attorneys, veterans, and former VA employees to provide veterans with maximum firepower when appealing VA decisions. To appeal your decision, visit PTSDlawyers.com.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it is mailbag time. I really welcome comments from you, our listeners. Please send me your thoughts to me at Danny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first comment?
Well, Colonel, Army vet and Navy mom Charlene was really impressed by the discussion on the electromagnetic pulse. She'd heard about it, but had no idea of what it could do.
Charlene, it's a real danger, and a nutcake like the leader of North Korea just might try it. I hope our military is prepared.
And Army vet Steve liked the review of Thunder Run. He was on that operation.
Then you made history, Steve. It's too bad our government made bad decisions after that victory. Okay, now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, on 18 April 1775, British troops march out of Boston on a mission to confiscate the American arsenal at Concord and to capture Patriot leaders Samuel Adams and John Hancock. As the British departed, Patriots Paul Revere and William Dawes set out on horseback from the city to warn Adams and Hancock and rouse the Minutemen. The Boston Patriots had been preparing for a British military action for some time, and upon learning of the British plan, Revere and Dawes set off across the Massachusetts countryside. They took separate routes in case one of them was captured. As the two made their way, Patriots in Charlestown waited for a signal from Boston informing them of the British troop movement. One lantern would be hung in the steeple of Boston's Old North Church if the British were marching out by Boston Neck, and two lanterns if they were crossing the Charles River. Two lanterns were hung, and the armed Patriots set out for Lexington and Concord accordingly. Along the way, Revere and Dawes roused hundreds of Minutemen, who armed themselves and set out to oppose the British. Revere arrived in Lexington shortly before Dawes. They warned Adams and Hancock and then set out for Concord. Early on April 19, a British patrol captured Revere. However, Prescott escaped and rode on to Concord to warn the Patriots there. After being roughly questioned for an hour or two, Revere was released when the patrol heard Minutemen alarm guns being fired on their approach to Lexington. About 5 a.m. on April 19, 700 British troops under Major John Pitcairn arrived to find a 77-man-strong colonial militia under Captain John Parker waiting for them on Lexington's Common Green. Pitcairn ordered the outnumbered patriots to disperse, and after a hesitation, the Americans began to drift off the green. Suddenly, the shot heard around the world was fired from an undetermined gun, and a cloud of musket smoke soon covered the green. When the brief battle of Lexington ended, 8 Americans lay dead and 10 others were wounded. Only one British soldier was injured. The American Revolution had begun.
Yes, it had. And on 18 April 1942, during World War II, 16 American B-25 bombers launched from the aircraft carrier USS Hornet, 650 miles east of Japan, and commanded by Lieutenant Colonel James Doolittle, attacked the Japanese mainland. The now famous Tokyo raid did little real damage to Japan, but it did hurt the Japanese government's prestige. Believing the air raid had been launched from Midway Island, approval was given to Admiral Yamamoto for an attack on Midway, which would also damage the Japanese prestige. Doolittle was eventually awarded the Congressional Medal of Honor.
You know, and Colonel, that raid on Tokyo was an incredible inspiration and boost to America that was really flagging morally.
Yes, indeed it was.
On 17 April 1943, during World War II, Coast Guard Lieutenant Ross Bullard and Boatswain's Mate First Class Mike Hall board the German submarine U-175 at sea after their cutter, the Coast Guard cutter Spencer, blasted the U-boat to the surface with depth charges when the U-boat attempted to attack the convoy the Spencer was escorting. They were part of a boarding party sent to seize the U-boat before the Nazi crew could scuttle it. The damage to the U-boat was severe, however, and it sank after both had boarded it. Both men ended up in the water as it slipped beneath the waves. Nevertheless, they carry the distinction of being the first American servicemen to board an enemy warship underway at sea since the War of 1812. The Spencer rescued 19 of the U-boat's crew, and her sister cutter, Duane, rescued 22.
That must have been exciting. And on 18 April 1945, during World War II, journalist Ernie Pyle, America's most popular war correspondent, was killed by Japanese machine gun fire on the island of Ishima in the Pacific. Pyle first began writing columns for the Scripps Howard newspaper chain in 1935. In 1942, after we entered World War II, Pyle went overseas as a war correspondent. He covered the North African campaign, the invasions of Italy and Sicily, and on June 7, 1944, went ashore in Normandy the day after the Allied forces landed. Pyle always wrote about the experiences of the enlisted men rather than the battles they participated in. That same year, he was awarded the Pulitzer Prize for distinguished correspondence, and in 1945 traveled to the Pacific to cover the war against Japan. On April 18th, Ernie Pyle was killed by enemy fire. After his death, President Harry Truman spoke of how Pyle, quote, told the story of the American fighting men as the American fighting men wanted it told, end quote.
Yeah, Colonel, that's one job I think I would have enjoyed, a war correspondent.
Well, instead, you and I were both grunts.
That's right. Oh, well. On 18 April 1983, the U.S. Embassy in Beirut, Lebanon, was almost completely destroyed by a car bomb explosion that killed 63 people, including the suicide bomber and 17 Americans. In 1975, a bloody civil war erupted in Lebanon with Palestinian and leftist Muslim guerrillas battling militias of the Christian Falange Party and other groups. During the next few years, Syrian, Israeli, and UN interventions failed to resolve the fighting, and on August 20, 1982, a multinational force featuring U.S. Marines landed in Beirut to oversee the Palestinian withdrawal from Lebanon. On April 18, the U.S. Embassy in Beirut was bombed. On October 23, Lebanese terrorists evaded security measures and drove a truck packed with explosives into the U.S. Marine barracks in Beirut, killing 241 U.S. military personnel. 58 French soldiers were killed almost simultaneously in a separate suicide terrorist attack. In February 1984, President Reagan announced the end of U.S. participation in the peacekeeping force, and the last U.S. Marines left Beirut.
And that's military history for today. Now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, a Seattle man was shot at a gas station convenience store Friday night as he tried to stop a robbery suspect from fleeing with the stolen merchandise, authorities said. Officers responded to a 911 call around 11:20 p.m. in the 2800 block of Rainier Avenue South in the Mount Baker neighborhood, Seattle police said. The clerk told police that a woman had pulled a gun on him after he tried to take back the items she allegedly stole. As the woman tried to flee, a customer confronted her and was shot, according to authorities. The victim was taken to the hospital, and his condition is currently unknown. Police have been unable to apprehend the suspect.
Thanks, Colonel. There's so much we could talk about here, but let's start with some basics. First, the number one rule to a gunfight is this: bring a gun. This well-intentioned customer violated this rule, and it may cost him his life. It's important to note that the male clerk did the same thing. He approached a woman and tried to take back the stolen merchandise, but when she pointed a gun at him, he wisely backed away. She didn't shoot him. The customer saw the gun, but disregarded it for some unknown reason, and he was shot. Vladimir Lenin is credited with this famous quote: "One man with a gun can control 100 without a gun." Here we see that the presence of a gun changes everything. I'm sure you've also heard this old Wild West adage: God created men, but Sam Colt made them equal. Folks, it doesn't matter whether the gun is in the hands of a man or a woman. Shooting an unarmed, law-abiding man is easy, provided you have no moral scruples. A 10-year-old child can kill a full-grown man with a gun under the right circumstances. This customer, however, well-intentioned, should have backed off in this scenario. Generally speaking, the only time an unarmed person can win a fight against a person with a gun is in close quarters combat, and even then, you need the proper skill set. This man had a stout heart, but he had no training in disarmament tactics. All the woman had to do was point the gun and press the trigger. Second, a handful of gas station goodies isn't worth dying for, and it isn't worth killing for. One thing we're seeing more and more in the law enforcement community and the self-defense industry is this: people are getting sick and tired of being pushed around by criminals. Our criminal justice system is broken, and the old adage, "crime doesn't pay," just isn't true anymore. I'll be the first to admit that it sickens me to watch criminals rob, rape, and pillage with seeming impunity, and it makes me want to stand up and stop them on my own. But there's another adage that I live by, and it goes like this: my number one rule is this: I go home to my family at night. So what would that mean if I were in this scenario? Well, I would have backed off and let the woman have her cigarettes or whiskey and her Snickers bars. I understand the moral sense of outrage, and I feel it too. But a wise person is able to override those feelings and pick their battles wisely. I've always believed that good can triumph over evil, but the ugly truth is this: our society has allowed evil to become rampant and powerful. So that means that if good is going to triumph, it must be strong, and we have to choose our tactics wisely. It also means that unarmed sheep won't be solving the problem for us. Front Lines of Freedom salutes the good heart and the bravery of this man who stepped in to right a wrong. He had the right attitude, but he lacked the tools and the training to succeed. America needs more good people with guns. So please, now is the time to get trained and get armed.
Amen, brother. Skip, that's always been true, but it's more true now. Our movie of the month is Chinese Tutankhamun. You can go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. We're going to review it at the end of the month. I'd really appreciate getting your comments on it. Please send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom will be our 800th show. Congressman and retired General Jack Bergman will share his insights. Stephen Davis from Turning Point USA will discuss Blexit, which is about racism. And John Lott will discuss our Second Amendment. Our book, Front Lines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has a mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase this book on Front Lines of Freedom. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all the shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.